now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my two very special guests are Naomi Swan and Deborah Jane East, two dear friends of mine. We have a lot of information to share. We will have all of their bio information and website information linked to our dedicated YouTube channel as well as our Cosmic Switchboard website, so we can dispense with all the formalities and dive right into it, because today the subject matter is the divine feminine, the inner feminine, and the need for all of us to recognize the unhealed parts of us. Next show we do together will be about embodying the divine masculine. We want to make sure we got both sides covered, but in this particular episode, we're going to be talking about embodying the divine feminine. What we have today, in large part, is the wounded divine feminine, just as we have the wounded divine masculine. And nowadays, particularly with the energy fluctuations and energy spikes the way they are, try as we might, it's very difficult to screen out the social engineering, the media, Hollywood, mind manipulation, behavior modification, etc., etc. It's difficult to tune out all of this stuff when these mind-controlled activists are pulling down statues and attacking people for having a certain kind of hairstyle. So what we need to do is recognize the underlying causes for a lot of our internal disquiet. Naomi just put out an excellent article called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And, you know, we must dig and find our landmines to create a mosaic. We're an exceptional piece of art made from collecting small pieces of colored glass, stone, or other raw materials. That's just the first, you know, one of the first lines of her excellent article, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And the way I interpret that is we have to recognize within us first before we recognize in anyone else and cast judgment or manifest intolerance and defensiveness. We must recognize the bad and the ugly within us before we can move forward. We cannot presume to want to help others when we still have these underlying core issues. I want to make a point before we get started here. What I'm seeing in the field and across the board throughout society at all different levels, because of this influx of energies and because of this incessant social engineering, it's causing even people within our field who, quite frankly, should know better to act out in certain ways. What's happened is, unconsciously, they've taken on this cultural Marxism programming of identity politics, where a particular identity group is conditioned to view themselves as a victim, as being oppressed, and their controllers, either in physical embodiment handlers or the unseen hyperdimensional handlers, point them in a direction and say, okay, there are your oppressors. They're the ones that are the cause for all your problems. They're the ones that are manifesting all these problems in your lives because you are victims. And what I'm seeing in our field is when somebody puts out an article, somebody makes a point, somebody puts out a post or a video on YouTube or on Facebook or on some other social media, what happens is this victim identity, this identity politics programming kicks in from people who should know better, quite frankly. Their egos have been activated. I've spoken about this so many times, but it bears repeating, that when our egos are activated by these unseen hyperdimensional entities, that plugs us further into the matrix and gets us into our headspace where we can start to be bombarded with thought loops and with mistrustful thoughts and so on and so forth. So what's happening now is, subconsciously, many people in the field have taken on this identity politics persona, and they see themselves at some level as a victim, and this is due precisely to these unhealed wounds, to this blocked traumatic energy. And so when someone comes along, puts up an article, makes a point, suddenly another person becomes very defensive about it, where they feel personally they're being attacked, to the point where they have to lash out, not just be defensive, but transitioning from the defensive into the offensive, into attack mode. Right? And so instead of taking what I call the shopping trolley approach, when you're pushing a shopping cart down a grocery store aisle, you only put into your shopping cart that which you can use at that particular time. Everything else you leave on the shelf. And it's the same in our field, where if someone is comes along and passes on information, I only take on board, I only put in my shopping cart that which I can use at that moment or resonates with me. Everything else, that which I don't believe, don't understand, can't make sense of, I leave on the shelf. But I don't cast judgment or manifest intolerance or defensiveness towards the person who's giving that information, right? And that's what I'm seeing now is all these unhealed wounds, the good, the bad, and the ugly, they're coming to the fore. And quite frankly, people who should know better have gotten their egos activated to the point where they feel that their version of the truth, their version of understanding is superior, of necessity, superior to everyone else's, right? Now, what is truth? Truth is the most subjective of things. Is truth tangible? Is truth something you can hold in your hand? Or is it something that requires a lot of deep internal work in order to process whatever outside stimuli exist in order to come to our own understanding of whatever our particular truth is? We're not in the business of making people believe our truths. What we can do is help facilitate other people to come to an understanding of what their truth is. And one quick analogy, and then we'll get right into this because we got so much information to share. These two wonderful ladies have taken their time out to give us this information. If I'm sitting at a table, like I have friends or acquaintances or family members or people I've just met, and they're at the other end of the table, and they're sitting there eating like a supersized extra helping of blue pills, and they're making all these dismissive comments about UFOs, aliens, about conspiracies, et cetera, it's not my responsibility to educate them, right? Here's why, because I use the same approach that the powers that be do to us, okay? Oh, you don't have clearance for that. You wouldn't understand it. Aliens don't exist. Just be satisfied with our explanation. So when I hear somebody next to me or on the other end of the table making all these dismissive comments about things I know to be true, I just say to myself, they don't have clearance. They're not at the level of consciousness. They haven't taken enough red pills yet to be able to relate to anything I say. So why should I take it personal when they're sitting there eating this extra helping of blue pills and being dismissive about things I hold dear? They don't have clearance. Their consciousness has prevented them up to that point from having clearance to understand any of this. So I only bring that up to point out that it's not my job to grab them by the lapel, shake them, and say, you must believe my truth. Okay? And so what I'm saying is, those of you out there in this field who should know better, you've got to divest yourself of this defensiveness, which then morphs into an attack, offensive mindedness, and you must be able to deal with everyone on a very tolerant, non-judgmental basis and respect people for having their own truth, which may not necessarily 100% jibe with your truth, because spiritual maturity dictates that you respect other people who you know to be heart-centered and plugged in an organic source. So let's dive right into it. Welcome to the show, Deborah Jane East and Naomi Swan. Welcome back.
Thank you, James. I just feel like jumping up and applauding. That was so well said and so heartfelt. I don't think I've ever heard it explained as good as you just did it. And I think that's why we love doing these shows with you, is because your insight and the way that you look at things is so empowering to me as a woman. I just want to thank you for all that you just said.
Thank you. I had to preface it because we're going to be delving into divine feminine, divine masculine issues, and that's going to trigger a lot of people. Okay, Naomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. It's so good to be back. And also, just listening to what you said is very, very, very powerful as we go through these corridors and we are triggered. Again, it's an opportunity to look at our own woundedness and our own competition energy, our jealous energy, our safety energy. You know, do we need to be in the spotlight all the time? I just want to add that to that, because all those external forces is what's causing this ego atmosphere,
Yes.
and that's what we want to flip. relationship so that we can turn into our true organic selves.
Absolutely. And the point that I didn't complete before we started this discussion is that, you know, earlier in the day and previously, I had been looking at these videos of these, you know, young people who'd taken the red pill. Some of these people were hardcore cultural Marxist leftists. Then something happened to wake them up. And now they see the illusion for what it is. And see, I am the kind of guy, I want that gal on the show. I want this guy on the show. I want this guy on the show. I want them to become as well known as possible. Not that they're relying upon me to be well known. Some of these people have a lot of views on YouTube already, but a true leader, folks, identifies, nurtures, and encourages other people to be leaders. We don't always have to be at the head of the pack, right? The true leaders know how to operate in a way that is selfless, and also they are able to reflect a lot of worthwhile attention onto people who are deserving of it. So that much being said, Naomi, do you want to comment about this fine article that you just wrote, which we'll be putting on the Cosmic Switchboard website, The Inner Feminine?
Of course, this came about 7 years ago when I was in a relationship with basically, you know, three men. And, you know, I was in a sexually in relationship with all of them, but just one. And I had the other three men hold space for me while I went through the corridors, not really understanding what I was doing as I was doing it, because I didn't have any guidance. There was no framework out there. There was no books to read. And so I had to figure out this energy so that I could unravel myself into my divine feminine, so that I was no longer seducing and seeing my own blind spots. And that's really what all three men showed me. And I needed three men to show me, I think, to really unravel myself, because I have such a desire. And of course, the desire came from the death of my son, because after he was killed, I have the passion to be organic as possible so that I won't have to live this life again, because it's been really painful. And so I wanted to bring this forward so that other people can learn from what I learned, and then they can create whatever workshop they want, because I think this is where we're going. Sometimes the women have so many wounds, it might take two or three men to hold her and embrace her while she's going through this. And that's really what happened with me. And so that's what really was my motivation to write this, and then to have the understanding of how wounded I was as a child, being raped by my pedophile grandfather. I didn't even know until I was about, you know, 46 years old. That was buried very, very deep in the unconscious mind. However, the universe was showing me over and over and over again that I was raped, but I couldn't put two and two together, because I was before I was 2 years old. So, you know, being a baby, I didn't understand it. And then the universe just basically showed me step by step by step where to go and what to do to have this unravel. And I go more into that into my blog.
You make a very good point in the article about something you refer to as a women's second attention. Could you describe to the listeners what you mean by the second attention?
The second attention came to me, again, probably around 8, 9 years ago when I was with Jason, and we are a powerful force field together. I mean, we were very, very powerful. So the more powerful the couple, what happens is the more powerful the inner dimensions. And so if you're not healed, they will use that accumulated energy against us. And so with me not having any kind of guideline, I was, you know, really like a fish out of water trying to figure this energy out. And fortunately, I was blessed to come across Rama, Dr. Frederick Lontz, and he explained that we live in an out-of-balance world, and that he says, I'm just going to read this because of the paraphrasing that I listened to. He says, integrity begins with oneself. Men have suppressed women, no blame, only attachment, to understand the cause and effect. Women amplify an authentic, powerful energy because life flows throws through them more than men. meaning it means that we have the power to birth. However, men also have this authentic energy too, but it operates differently. And that's what we need to look at. How does this operate differently than women? Throughout the ages, men have been threatened by the power of woman, so they have negatively rejected the power within themselves, therefore suppressing women. Women learn to develop a second attention to survive on this planet through manipulating by projecting sexual energy out to men, producing false power to get the job, the man, the raise, and to move up in the world. This behavior is justified because women need to survive. And that's what Dr. Lance talked about when I was learning this energy. And once I saw that, I saw this big, you know, storehouse of sexual energy that basically said high voltage on it. And that's what all the women are, that's what we're plugged into. And then what happens is one big accumulation, a collective energy. And then when we are seducing a man, all that energy is going into the man, and then they peak, and then it's a frenzy back and forth. And that's where the seduction comes in, and that's where the interdimensionals come in and use that energy on their behalf and keep us in lockdown. So actually, men actually can go into enlightenment. This is what the Dr. Lynn says. Men can go into enlightenment easier than women, because women have been in this vortex of sexual energy to survive. And so now women need to know, how do we survive? How do we have support? And how do we have the knowingness inside and healing the wounds, knowing we'll be okay without this second attention? And so that's what we're bringing up to today. Where is the second attention, and where are the women plugged into, so that we can heal not only the divine feminine, but we'll also heal the divine masculine as we do so?
A key point the Rama, Dr. Frederick Lentz, made was at the very end of that paragraph, producing false power to get the next job, man, raise, etc., to move up in the world. And this is the key point. This behavior is justified because women need to survive. So the divine feminine, due to the onslaught that it's been subjected to from time immemorial, has been shunted into that lizard brain R-complex fight or flight mode. So they see this second attention as a means just to survive, not to thrive, not to coexist happily and merrily, but just to survive. And that really is sad, and it's a sad indictment of how we allowed this condition to degenerate to such an extent. Deborah, did you want to make a comment on that?
Well, I do. I just want to say that the impressions that are made on us as children are very important. I was raised up on a farm, and baby ducks, when they're born, if their mother is not present, whatever they see becomes their mother, and they will follow that, and they imprint on it. They learn that because, you know, they've just been born. They don't know. I remember as a child, my father was very stern. He wasn't a conversationalist. He didn't talk a whole lot. He had a very prejudiced view about women, females. You know, they stay at home, they're seen, not heard, they do work, they work in the home, they don't get jobs, you know, that type of thing. I believe that when we project, when our fathers project that on us as a child, sometimes we carry it through our whole lives, and we think that is the only way that we can compete. I remember I had five sisters. One of the things that girls will do to get what they want is become daddy's girl. Daddy's girl. What does daddy girls do? They're the first one. If dad, you know, my father, he wanted boys, so he wanted to go fishing. Well, my sister Irene would say, "I'll go fishing with you, daddy." She, over and over, whatever my dad wanted, she was there. And it turned out she was the favorite. And because she did all the things that he liked, you know, I always felt left out. I thought, well, why am I not good enough? That's how that relayed upon me. I carried that for 28 years of my life, that I never felt good enough to get the attention. Some women, growing up, in order to get what they want, they become a daddy's girl. They want to not displease daddy. They want to dress the way daddy wants. They want to do all the things so daddy won't be upset with them. And what that does is it projects on us that we have to have approval, that it's not okay to be ourselves. So what Naomi is saying has so many connotations for women all during their life. I just think it's so important to look at these things.
Naomi, how does the second attention, how does it compromise spiritual enlightenment for women?
Well, it compromises them because when it is so ingrained in the unconscious mind, and just like you said, James, it's in the survival mechanism, it's in the flight or fight reaction. And so we think that we have to, you know, we have to be the first one, just like Deborah says, or we have to do this, or we have to do that, or we're not going to survive. Because if you think of all the accumulated past life energy of women where, you know, we were replaced with another, you know, a younger woman, you know, and so we were thrown out to the gutter to die, and then the younger woman came in, and because, you know, that was the hierarchy with the, you know, with the masculine energy. So we have those lifetimes that we're healing right now. That's what's bubbling up in us. That's why we're so reactive sometimes with some of this energy, with some of this seduction energy. So if you're in a relationship and you've got yourself and another partner, and then there's some, maybe some integrity going on, and even the conscious or the unconscious mind, it feels like you're going to be rolled over by a truck because it is so accumulated that we spin in it. And so then we react to it in all of our insecurities, trying to just to survive. And, you know, my higher self, and I've said this before, definitely knew what I was doing on some level. I didn't, you know, my wounded inner child didn't, but my higher self did. When I had Rick, my husband, back me up through the corridor with Jason, who was, you know, who mirrored my father, who was a predator. But I needed Jason in my life, the predator energy, to unravel those imprints, because Jason didn't hold that predator. I mean, because Rick didn't hold that predator, Jason did hold it. And so by having Jason in my life was such a gift to me to unravel that. But that was dangerous. I mean, I've heard Evie Lorgan talk about this. These are dangerous relationships. So I'm not saying go get into a dangerous relationship to unravel. I'm saying create, do what I did on some level. I created a workshop. I created Rick to hold space for me because I needed a masculine to go through these dangerous realities and blow up these landmines within my own mind. And also, Jason also had an opportunity to blow up the landmines within his. You see, and so to me, that is the key. We have to blow up the landmines within so that we move out of the second attention.
By doing so, we get out of this competitive mindset. The competitive mindset is fostered and nurtured by trust issues, mistrusting one's own feelings and one's own intuitions, which project out into mistrust of others. And I've seen this in school, going back to grade school, but especially junior high. For those that are not familiar with the American school system, like years 6, 7, 8, and then high school would be 9, 10, 11, 12. How many times I'd see, like, a pretty girl would move in from out of town, right? And then just the reaction that her mere presence has on gals that are already there, that have formed their own cliques, their own power blocks. You see this on a TV show, Survivor, where in order to survive, they have to form these alliances of convenience momentarily, and eventually they're going to stab each other in the back anyway. And so what happens is, what happens is these girls look at this new girl as a threat. And I don't know, I've always had this ability to read people, to read body language, and I would look at this new girl and I would see a girl who's not even confident in herself. I would see a girl with her own trust issues. I could see a girl that has been hurt at a very deep core level. And, you know, she's having difficulty making eye contact with everyone in the classroom. This in itself is interpreted by the other girls, the clique that's already formed. Oh, she's stuck up, right? So all these defensive slash offensive manifestations begin to appear. Just because the mere presence of another girl in their environment has put them off to such an extent. And you know what, a lot of you gals listening, you know what I'm talking about. You've been on one side of that equation or the other. You've been the new girl that everyone looked down on and bullied or whatever, and then you've been all some of you have been on the other side of the equation where you were like a ringleader or one of the people that helped to bully or make this, new girl feel, poorly about herself. And also how that manifests later when so many women try to have a relationship with a guy, but because of these manifold trust issues, and because of, the well-known predilections of some males to be players, to be not very, in integrity and whatnot, it fosters this feeling of mistrust in the girl, where if they don't, nowadays, especially, it's exacerbated by social media, by cell phones and text messages. If you don't,
Definitely.
if you don't get it, if a girl doesn't get a text message back from a guy in like four minutes or less, it's like, what's he doing? Where's he going? Who's he talking to? So all these unhealed aspects within the gal starts projecting itself out. And if the male, and typically I'm one of them, we come from this divine wounded masculine aspect. If we're not sensitive to that, if we're not secure in ourselves enough to, okay, I'm going to let her have this moment. She has legitimate, deep-seated reasons for feeling this way. Rather than get defensive, and I keep going back to that concept of defensiveness, rather than get defensive and lash out in my own way, be it passive aggressively or whatever the case may be, I should let that gal have her moment of feeling needy, mistrustful, wounded, whatever the case may be. But sadly and unfortunately, because the system, and we see it now in spades, how the genders, the roles, everything is being turned up on its head. Sadly, most males, not all, but I would say many, would have a difficult time dealing with a woman who's coming from those trust issues, coming from those second attention issues.
As women, we need to take ourselves out of competition. I am a radio host, and there's lots of other female radio hosts out there. They all have their own strengths and things that they do well. But I have things that I do well, and I don't look at it as a contest between me or any of them. It's okay to just be who we are. And we have to learn to be satisfied with that and not worry about, comparing to Cosmo magazine or, the way they project women that don't have an ounce of fat on their body and their makeup is perfect. We're real. We're not flawless. We have imperfections, but you know what? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. One of the most dynamic couples I ever saw was a man and woman. He was very plain. He was not attractive as far as males go. He was a little bit overweight. He was balding. He had a scar on the side of his face. His wife was absolutely gorgeous. They were next door neighbors with me. And many times she would tell me, she'd say, people ask me all the time, well, why are you with him? Why are you with that guy? You're gorgeous. You could have anybody you want to. She said, you know what? He is the only man that looks at me. I can get up in the morning, not put makeup on. I can slouch around if I want to. I can get out and dig in my garden. And he still thinks I am just as beautiful as I am when I'm dressed up to the tees. And that moved me. That really touched me. We've got to learn to accept ourselves as we are and not project images, false images, I might say, because Photoshop is really, really good. They can make any woman look good. But it is okay. It is okay to just look like we are.
Naomi, did you want to
Correct.
comment?
When we're using Deborah just talked about as far as making ourselves look perfect, we're actually denying ourselves. And that is denying ourselves, and then we're projecting it out to the world that this is our really a mask of who we are. And then the masculine comes in and they look, wait a minute, this is what your picture looked like in person. I mean, you on the, on Facebook, and then I see in person, and these don't match. And so then that creates rejection because really we rejected ourselves by putting a mask on ourselves anyways. So I think, that's what we need to look at and understanding how the mind works, where we're trying to get inner wounded attention. You know, we're doing it externally instead of going inside, you know, and I will just refer to, you know, the YouTube video we have online, Choosing the Hero Within, because we really need to go inside and look at those wounds and choose the hero within and look at those emotional wounds so we quit doing that. And I also think that the other thing that we do as women, and I think it's mind control for men too, I think it's, we don't really understand what love is. You know, love is seduction. We know that's what I was taught. I mean, when I was a little girl, my older sister had me striptease for the neighborhood and my dad's friends. And so here I am, 5, 6 years old. I've got my clothes on, but I've got my mother's bra and underwear on. And I'm seeing the miniature walk in the joint and throw them on their bra and underwear at them. I mean, I can't even imagine I did that. I mean, I look at that now and I'm heartbroken that I did that. But they were laughing at me. I was in the spotlight. That's how I thought that you love me, is for me to seduce like that. And so my father, you know, I've shared this before, is an alcoholic. So I really didn't have a good bonding with him or a good connection, except for those times, was when I was in seduction. And then he would put me on his lap, love me and praise me because I look good for all of his friends. And so, you know, when you understand that, this is really objectifying a child. And really, I just learned at a very young age to prostitute myself energetically, you know, knowing that, you know, this is how you get love. And you go into, you know, overcare, codependent, needy insecurities, just like what you were saying, James. And that's why, you know, I probably needed 3 men to go through this particular corridor to figure all this stuff in myself, to figure it out. And then, you know, just on my father's behalf, I mean, his father chained him up. Father was a pedophile, but chained him up like an animal outside to a tree. And so that was his growing up. And so, you know, we really have to kind of break some of this down and articulate this energy. You know, here's my father. He's bought up by a pedophile. He's chained to a tree like an animal. All his brothers are. Tease him while they walk home from school. So this is what he knows. You know, this is what love is, right? Being chained up. I mean, the symbolism here is very, very ironic if you look at it. You know, and then he wanted to also sell my sister when she was about 14 to his friends. You know, she was a virgin and he was just looking at her like, hey, we can make some money. And then my mom was like, no, you know, even though she was an alcoholic, she put a stop to it and said, no, I am not doing this. So that really, that's when she finally, I think, hit her bottom line with him and said, no, you're not going to do this to my children. However, she let the other happen because, you know, that was the programming back then. Seduction. If you really look at some of these shows, you know, back then that you do seduce. I mean, Let Me Entertain You is a pretty seductive song.
When I read that bit that you wrote about how you did the striptease as a young child, I flash back to the memory of reading a book by a gal. She called herself Kate in the book, Kathy. And she talked about her pedophile father. And years later, when she was an adult and she confronted her father and she had the face-to-face with him, what would happen was the father, A, he was a pedophile to begin with, and for whatever reason, his upbringing, his genetics, whatever the case may be. And also, another dynamic, if memory serves, was that the mother and the father were not intimate. They kind of lived in the same house, but kind of went their separate ways. And so she is, the little girl, Kate, is stuck in this dynamic. She desperately wants to please her father. She desperately wants to feel love from her father. And so what her father started doing was, the moment that the mother left the house to go on a business trip, to go to work, whatever the case may be, you know, he would be on to her. He would call out to the house, Katie, where are you? He would play this game with her, right? And so years later, when she confronted him, she made a very good point that sticks with me to this day. It's like, you took me, your own child, a vulnerable child, and in order to please you, right, In order to make me feel love from you first groomed me. You had me sit on your lap, like countless other daddies have with their little girls, but then you carried it further than that. Then you started taking it further and further and further, and then you projected your feelings on me. You made me feel bad. You made me feel bad when I didn't go along with it, with your molestation. And then you made me feel unworthy, and you made me feel poorly about myself until I just gave into it, right? And so when I read that, when she confronted her father years down the track, that moved me so much, and it just made me think that just how many gals out there have to go through with this, in society, in their own families. So thank you so much, Naomi, for sharing that. It really moved me deeply when I read that.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, this is the energy that we have to heal because I think this happens a lot more than what we think.
Well, I just have to agree. We carry things from our childhood throughout our lives, and sometimes, we don't realize how much they have affected us. My father being so strict and hard to please, and if I would make all A's and one B, he would say, "Bring that B up next time." I've carried that with me for a lifetime, thinking that I'm not good enough until I finally decided, well, why am I thinking that? Because I now know that my father had some mental problems. He was bipolar, and he projected all those things on me when none of it was the truth. And suddenly, I was able to look at my father as a man, a human being with a problem that he had, and it had nothing to do with me as a child. When I did that, it was so freeing. I learned to accept myself. Suddenly, I felt good enough, and my life was so much better. But that's not to say that that feeling never comes back to me, because sometimes if I get a lot of criticism about something, I will go back to that wounded child, and I want to carry that for a while. But because I work so closely with Naomi on a lot of her projects and things, I have learned that is not the thing to do. I've learned to recognize when I do that. And I think if other women will do that, they will find so much growth in their personal life. There's not a day that goes by that I don't see a woman on social media projecting their sexuality. There's some of them I just sort of stand back and watch because they show the cleavage, they show the sexual behavior, what is it they call it, the pout mouth or something. They do all these things and they try to look seductive. And what I see a lot of times is they're trying to get attention and be in the spotlight. But is that the kind of attention they want? I've even seen some of them do that, and then they admonish the man for making sexual remarks to them. And I'm thinking, are they even aware of what they're doing? We've got to learn ourselves. We've got to look in the mirror and reflect on who we are and what has branded us. And I'll have to say, my father branded me for a lot of different things because he was my first imprint. And because I've been able to put all that aside, my life is so much better. I feel so much myself, and I don't worry about measuring up. I don't worry about my hair's not perfect like, some of the supermodels. I don't really care. I don't put my makeup on every day. I don't have to compete. I'm comfortable in my own skin. And I tell you what, that is priceless to me.
You made a point also, Naomi, about how denial plays a role in self-denial of our circumstances, self-denial of the wounded, unhealed trauma within us, how it's a block to healing and how it turns out to be a block in our awakening.
Thank you, Deborah, and thank you for bringing that in because I was one of those women. I mean, I wasn't on social media because social media wasn't up. But when Jason met me, I mean, he told me I had some of the most seductive energy he had ever met. Now, I didn't think that because, I've been in that severe car wreck. My legs were pretty, scarred up. I felt really kind of scarred up and didn't feel like I was even knew what the seduction was, really. It was running me. It was just running me so much. I just thought it was really who I was. This is just a part of me. This is how I operate. And after the car wreck, you know, I mean, I had beautiful legs. And after that car wreck, they got pretty scarred up, and I couldn't use my legs to manipulate anymore, you know. And so it was just like, fascinating how I kind of got to go through that corridor as how am I going to manipulate when my body's been pretty damaged, really, you know. So I had to run through that. But what Jason shared with me one time, his wisdom was, women don't know, but when men look at them and kind of give this approval, it feeds their ego, and that is the second attention. So right there, when he showed me that, I went, oh my gosh, I see now. I'm always wanting that. You know, I would dress up as perfectly as possible, you know, to go out there and basically get the eye or the look, if you will. And then that would feed my ego, not realizing what I was doing, because to me, that was love. You see, that was the seduction, was the love. That was the false program.
It was filling the void, the unhealed part of you.
Yes, yes, it was filling the void. But that is how my father showed me he loved me. And so Jason gave me a huge pearl that day of going, oh, you know, aha, I see what I'm doing. Because, you know, I'm blind to myself. I mean, I've got, you know, all these blind spots running. I have no idea. And so it was paradise when these guys were showing me how my ego was operating and how I was running so that I could, you know, reset myself into my true alignment. And it took a lot of years to do that. I'm not going to say it's going to take that for everybody, but I had to reevaluate how I was really showing up for myself, and then externally how I was showing up. You know, how was I really hooking? How was I playing hook, line, and sink him? How was I playing competition energy if I went out dancing? Who was I looking at or judging, or who was my competition? I mean, I'm not saying I did this right then, but I did play that role in my 20s and 30s. 40s, 50s, grew out of it. But, you know, what I'm saying is that's kind of what we do. That's part of the seduction energy. And when we deny that part of us is when, just like we were talking about the mask, we abandon ourselves. So every time we put on the mask, every time we put on the seduction, what happens is we go into rejection and abandonment, which is also a pipe dream to the second attention. Because remember, these satanic lower entities are using this energy as a force field to pipeline. So when we understand that it's a big setup for oppressing the divine feminine, then we can understand how everything operates. And I think James and Deborah, you know, that brings us into understanding the shadow. And we really got to bring up the shadow, because the shadow, that was so hard with me with Jason one time. You know, I'll just be really, really honest, because you know how I am. And one time, you know, we were making deep, passionate love, and God, all of a sudden I'm in my power, I'm on top. And it was hard for me to be on top because of my neck and my back, but I had some body work done, and I'm like on top and while we were making love, and all of a sudden we were just like so present with each other. It was just, I mean, it was astronomical, the presence, because the presence in our power. What happened is all of a sudden I'm looking in his eyes and all these doors open up of him raping me. And I'm going, oh my gosh, this is so hard. I mean, here I am, I'm with Jason, we're in this passionate, and all of a sudden I'm looking in his eyes and I'm seeing rape, 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 past lives going on. And my higher self basically is saying, stay with it, be present, 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 stay with it, be there, be there, be there, be there, be there, be there. And so I was, and then finally, you know, probably about 20 minutes, I'm not exaggerating, 20 minutes to a half an hour, which was intense, 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 divine, sacred energy, because we were so, 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 so present with each other. Then what happened, of course, we exploded into a beautiful orgasm. I know just amplified and transformed the energy. However, right afterwards, there was some energy that manipulated Jason. And it was to do with, again, some of the predator energy. And I won't go into that story, but kind of, you know, going into little girl energy. And we were talking about, after we made love, about teenager energy and some of the experiences that he had been through. And when I saw that, I was kind of like, had some anger going. And I went outside, and we went outside. I remember it was my birthday. We went outside, and we were supposed to go on the river, but it was cool that day. And instead, we went to the movies, and I can't remember the name of the movie now, but it's a popular one, and there was a snake in the movie. Then I had said to him, I cannot stand this snaky predator energy anymore, because it was snaking in on us, and I could feel it. You know what I mean? Here we've gone through this deep, organic killing, and now I can feel the snake coming in. And I said, I've had enough of this predator energy. And then, I'm not kidding you, there was a fire by my house, and it was very close to my house. We were driving home from dinner, and there was a fire, and we couldn't even get to my house. We had to park my car and walk in. And we came in, went to the news, and they said there is a snake-like fire in the area that we lived in. And to me, I know it was Jason and I purifying the energy with what we did while making love. And the reason why I'm sharing this is where we're going, and this is what we need to do. But we need to do it in purification. I was operating in purification on the best I knew with my unconscious players. Jason was too at some point. But Jason, you know, on his behalf, I mean, with his grandfather being a predator, a pedophile, and my grandfather being a pedophile, that man, big, huge power to take on those two, if you know what I mean. And so I want people to understand this with deep compassion and deep understanding, that anybody that has that kind of courage to go through that corridor is phenomenal. And that's what we need to look at. Not that the relationship was a success or a failure, because on many levels, we succeeded and we blew up many realities until the energy got so intense that we had to, you know, break up.
Well, that's quite a story. And when you point that out, I'm also reminded of the fact that so many women out there were abused and violated as young girls. So as males, as men, it's incumbent upon us, when we're in a relationship with a gal and for whatever reason she doesn't want to do certain sexual things, we have to be sensitive to that. We can't say, oh, come on, if you really love me, you'll do this, that, or the other thing, right? Well, what if this, that, or the other thing was something she was compelled to do by a family member or by a pedophile or by, you know, some previously abusive, controlling partner, right? So when we're with a gal who, for whatever reason, and she seems unable to communicate why she may not want to do something, we as males, and it's where we step up and get into the divine masculine role, we have to say to ourselves and to her, I'm sorry that you feel that way, and whatever hurts and whatever trauma that, you know, however you want to word it, which led up to you feeling this way, you know, I honor you, and I'm here to help you heal. And if you never want to do those things, that's fine. And, you know, sometime down the track, if you want to do those things, that's fine. But hold space for her. I love that term that you use, Naomi, about holding space, because it's all-encompassing. It applies in so many different areas in our life. So I just thought I'd throw that in, because there's so many guys out there that are always complaining about, oh, my girlfriend doesn't want to do this, she doesn't want to do that. Well, there may be a good reason why they don't want to do those things, and we have to be sensitive to that.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, I couldn't open the doors that we opened if I didn't have the sensitivity and the the intimacy created and the safety to go into those places. There's no way. And so that's the other thing. When we're not feeling safe, there's no way we can go into it. And again, I have to, you know, credit Vipassana meditation, because that's where I really got my sustainability to be able to hold in that present moment, even though I was seeing all the past life raping programs running through Jason. You know, I was just able to hold it, watch it, observe it, hold it, watch it, observe it, without moving. Boom. That's how we can advance ourselves in using this energy once we really exercise the muscle and we're in sustainability. And I just wanted to kind of put that in the forefront, because I believe that's where we're going, but we have energetic muscle work to do first in order for us to do that as a collective, you know, moving forward. And going forward, again, we have to go through the, you know, dig deeper in the rabbit hole. And I think I want you to take over, James, and you too, Deborah, bring this in. Is as I was writing this blog, this is how my son helps me on the other side. He will use the computer and then he'll pop a screen up and I won't even know what it is. You know, I'm learning as I'm going with, I'm learning too, you know, as we're doing this stuff. And the word determinism popped up and I'm like, what's that? So I go to a YouTube video, I watch it, I read a little bit, and I go, oh my gosh, because it's been so confusing out there about people saying, you know, we don't have no free will. And I'm like, I have really strong free will. I don't understand why they think they don't have free will. So it's been confusing for me to really understand the concept of people saying we don't have free will and we do have free will. And basically, the way I see it, and I want you guys to add in on here, is the unconscious is the determinism. So in our unconscious mind, there is no free will, and our future is determined. That is what's going on. When we're conscious and we're present, we have free will. When we are in that free will is when we're in the freedom realities. So the two are running all the time. And it's basically making the free will reality the more benefit reality instead of, again, the second intention or the determinism. How do you guys see that?
Well, I pretty much agree with Naomi, because if we don't have that determinism, we'll just, it's basically like we just willed. There used to be a banner that said, grow where you're planted. And I always like that, because we've got to accept, you know, who we are, what we've been through, and learn to be able to look at that and not be threatened by the information and attack people like you talked earlier, James. People, when we try to troubleshoot our lives sometimes and put out this information and stuff, we're often attacked or regarded as flaky or crazy or, you know, things like that.
Disinfo agent, shill.
Right, shill. We get called all those names. Or they unfriend us, you know.
Yeah.
Myself, you know, I have a lot of women, and I know Naomi has also. They're very threatened. They're very threatened. They think they're in competition. They're not. You know, we do what we do. We're not trying to be the best or put our work out over their work. My favorite saying, we're all a piece of the puzzle. You know, don't feel threatened. You know, I like what you said a lot, James, about, you know, as a man, you know, you don't have to be king of the hill all the time. We can let other leaders come in and do their work, other researchers, and put their information and stuff out there and not be threatened. We don't have to be in the spotlight all the time. And Naomi, you know, just what she said while she was talking a while ago and explaining, you know, about, you know, her scars and different things like that. That was so healing to me. You know, I have scars myself. I have scars from surgeries that I've had. And one of the most beautiful persons I know with a scar is my daughter. And when she was a little girl, she went by this dog, and the dog jumped at her and put a little scar on her cheek. And she never tries to cover it up. She doesn't put makeup on it. She's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And someone asked her sometime, you know, if you could get this makeup and put that on your face and nobody could see that scar. She said, I don't want to hide it. She said, it's just a small thing. She says, I don't even see it. She said, what that reminds me of is how my mom grabbed me up and took care of me and made me feel so loved and protected. She held my hand when she took me to the hospital and they treated it. And she said, I remember how much love I felt from my mom. And I thought, wow, gosh, that is so beautiful. And, you know, we've got to look at ourselves. You know, I'm 61 years old. You know, I have scars from my life. I have wrinkles. I have all these things. I don't care. I don't care that I'm going to be 62. I don't worry about getting old. I wouldn't change it. I don't want to go back. I want to be who I am. And I think that's what Naomi is bringing out. You know, all this stuff that she has went through has made her who she is today. And I know she's my friend and I'm a little bit prejudiced, but I look at Naomi as a leader. I look at her as a role model,
I
a
do too.
positive role model, and a mentor. I remember when you introduced me to her, you said, "This is a switched on gal." I had no idea she was going to be my very best friend. And it's because of her strength. Her ability to be able to peel these layers of the onion away and to do that reflection, not just for other people, but she does it to her own self too. That is what is powerful about the lesson that Naomi is trying to teach us.
And that's an object lesson too, Deborah, about what you shared about your daughter's scar, because, you know, the way determinism works at a conscious and an unconscious level. Let's use the example of another girl who, a young girl who was, you know, unfortunately bitten by a dog or something, and, you know, caused her to have a permanent scar. For some gals, that could have been a subconscious slash conscious program where she would overcompensate in the other direction, more makeup, more of an effort
Right.
to hide her true self. And see, what I've come to understand about determinism is when we have the subconscious programming working through us, let alone the conscious stuff, which, you know, a lot of us, we're not totally in denial. We know about the conscious things are hot buttons, you know, that people can press wittingly or unwittingly. But we're just talking subconscious here. What it does is we act towards that subconscious programming, and it does have a role in determining our very destiny, because the subconscious programming, it links up, it works in concert with self-sabotage, self-betrayal, all the shame-based programming. Because of the shame-based programming I was subjected to, I literally didn't feel I was worthy to have the good things of life. I didn't feel I was worthy to have, you know, the love of my life. I didn't think I was worthy to be a good person, to be somebody that can be liked and admired and, you know, be a good friend to. And thankfully, Barbara Bartholik spent so much of her time healing me and soothing me and encouraging me to write, encouraging me to put information out, telling me that you have to do this because this is what you're meant to do, and encouraging me when my self-worth was at a nadir, when my self-worth was, I was so shame-based, right? If I had not had that encouragement from Barbara, I may not be doing this, because she was able to, in her own unique way, overwhelm the self-sabotage, shame-based programming, which was having a deterministic effect on me, shunting me down a certain path. And then you add on to that all these other issues of, you know, other forms of self-sabotage, whatever they may be. You know, in my case, there was a lot of different things I used to self-sabotage myself in my life. And I had to, like Naomi talked about, have an honest reappraisal and do a life inventory and realize, okay, what parts of my life, what am I doing that's causing me to have all these setbacks when things seem to be going along smoothly and you know, I'm just kind of skipping down the primrose path, something happens, you know. And usually when I'm honest with myself, realize that it was something that I'd done something consciously, subconsciously. And then when I realized that, instead of, okay, you know, be forgiving of yourself, love myself, forgive myself and move on, learn from it, the self-loathing, the beating myself up unmercifully aspect kicked in, and you know, I would just lock myself up in, you know, in my house and just have a pity party, basically. So that was how I cope with these things until Barbara and some other people came into my life. Eve Lorgan, we talked about her earlier, people that really played a pivotal role in helping me develop self-worth and confidence in myself. Otherwise, I would have been running on those deterministic programs subconsciously for the rest of my life. Well, we've reached the end of a very fascinating and moving first half, and we've got so much to talk about, because in the second half, Naomi is going to go into details what we know as beta sex kitten programming, because she didn't realize at the time, and it took a lot of healing and a lot of work further down the track before she realized that she was part of this, you know, beta sex kitten programming and the manifold malign influence it had on her life and what she's had to do to overcome this programming. And she talked a bit about that in the first half, but like I said, we're just getting started. We've got all of Naomi and Deborah's bio and website information linked to our dedicated YouTube channel and our website. For those of you who are listening, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.